It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the journeys of remarkable athletes who use adaptive equipment and where they find meaning in life and relationships. Call in with your question or thoughts about athletes with a disability, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Patty Cisneros-Privo is a three-time Paralympian and program manager for diversity, equity, and inclusion at UW Health. Her new children's book is called Tenacious, 15 Adventures Alongside Disabled Athletes. Patty, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of the show, big fan of you, so thank you for having me.
Oh, that's so sweet of you to say that. You know, I'm just wondering, remarkable athletes with adaptive equipment, they are all around us. How did you choose which sports and which athletes to feature in Tenacious?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And you're right, they are all around us, and we don't know them. So that was kind of what sparked the idea to write Tenacious. You know, it was really tricky because I wanted to highlight the diversity of adaptive sports, of disability. So I tried to pick, you know, different disabilities to highlight in Tenacious, as well as different sports. In working with my editor at Lee and Lowe, we wanted to make sure we captured different sort of scenery for the illustrator. And so, you know, each spread isn't a gym, you know, inside the gym court or outside. And so it was really hard because I know all these incredible athletes, all these incredible Paralympians. And I started with my friends. So a lot of the athletes in Tenacious are close friends of mine. And then I was really just mindful of diversity overall, you know, ethnicity, race, sexual orientation, disability, adaptive sport. And that's how I went about selecting the athletes.
You're an athlete yourself. Could you share more about your personal journey? Because you're shining the light on others here. Some of them your friends, but really not yourself.
Yes, I played all kinds of sports growing up. Cross country, track and field, basketball, volleyball, all the things. And then I was involved in a car accident and acquired a spinal cord injury. And my physical therapist at the time noticed that I was an athlete and I had this history of sports. And so she had someone come and talk to me about wheelchair basketball. His name was Tony Williams. He has now passed. But he came in, you know, in his chair, pushing his wheelchair basketball or his basketball wheelchair. And I was, you know, in a full brace, still learning to sit up and do everyday things from a chair. And we went outside on this like rinky dink basketball court, and he was just shooting some baskets. And it really like blew my mind. It was incredible to see. And I didn't know that adapted sports existed. So that was the catalyst to want to continue to compete in sport. And so I went to the University of Illinois, got my master's degree, but also played on the collegiate wheelchair basketball team as a student athlete. And during that time, I learned about the Paralympics, which is parallel to the Olympics for athletes with physical disabilities. And, you know, I think many of us grew up watching the Olympics on TV and having that Olympic dream. And I had that chance to do that on the Paralympic side. And so, you know, I'm a very competitive person, and that competitive bug got me, and I really trained hard to make Team USA, and I made Team USA back in 1999. So I'm dating myself, but I had a great, great career, three Paralympic Games, and then two-time gold medalist with Team USA. And in 2008, I had the honor to captain the team.
Patty Cisneros-Privo, new children's book out, Tenacious, Paralympian, Disability Advocate. You can join in the conversation at any point. Call in with a question, a comment at 800-642-1234. Patty, every page is so beautifully illustrated, and the cover, it depicts some of the athletes in action, and one athlete appears to be a young man wearing a helmet and zooming through the air in a wheelchair. Can you explain what sport is being shown here?
Yes, thank you for that question. I think, you know, personally, I think this athlete is the coolest in the book. His name is Dalmas Mayo. He's a teenager, and he is competing in WCMX, which is the equivalent of BMX, but for adaptive sport. So he does all these tricks and skills and stunts from his chair. My illustrator for Tenacious, Dion MBD, he loves clouds, like sky and clouds are his aesthetic. So I love how he captured Dalmas kind of, you know, zooming through the air like he does. And he's just an incredible athlete. It's funny because Dalmas was added toward the end of the editing process. In working with my editor, Cheryl Klein, you know, I had just adults in the book. And she's like, well, it's a children's book. It'd be great to add some kids into the mix. And so I made the mistake of putting it online, like a request online on social media, asking for, you know, incredible disabled youth athletes. I got over 50, and it was really, really hard to narrow down because all of them had incredible stories, and they were just, you know, being ordinary kids playing sports and excelling in their, you know, respective sport. And I chose Dalmas because of his sport. It's fairly newer. WCMX hopefully will be in the Paralympic Games in the future. And when Dalmas started, he won like 3 championships back to back to back. I mean, he's just an incredible athlete. So yeah, I'm excited to showcase him on the cover.
I would imagine too that the stunts they do and the falls would take a real toll on the wheelchair, not to mention the athlete, but they must have some very durable wheelchair equipment to do this sport.
Yes. And you have to, you know, for all of the sports, you have to get equipment that goes with that sport, just like non-disabled sports. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your high tops, your basketball shoes that you wear to play stand-up basketball. And that's the case for adaptive sports. So his chair, I think, you know, it's designed in a way that it won't tip as easily. It may be heavier in certain areas. I don't know. I've never done WCM MX. It's funny. I was asked that at my book launch. So I had my book launch last weekend, and someone asked me, you know, if there's a sport that you haven't tried, what would it be? And, you know, Kate, I'm a little older, so I don't know if I would want to try any of these sports, but if I...
I'm going to see you at that skate park. I really am.
Yeah. I'm too scared. You know, if I was in my 20s again, it would be different, but I would certainly try WCMX if I was younger.
I want to talk about language here, because at the end of Tenacious, you explain specific language and how it's used in the book. Can you take us into why you included these explanations?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that question. You know, during my writing process with Tenacious, I learned a lot about ableism. And ableism is the oppressive system that discriminates and or is prejudiced against disabled individuals. And that's just a really basic definition. I would encourage all of the listeners to look up Talila Lewis, T.L. Lewis. They are a disability activist, and they have a working definition of ableism, but just very basically, it's, you know, an oppressive system against disabled people. And I, you know, as an athlete, I very much engaged in ableist language and culture, and I didn't know it. So as I was writing Tenacious and working with expert readers who were also disability activists, I really learned the harm that language can have. And so, you know, I wanted to dismantle that for myself, that internalized ableism. And I wanted that to be reflected in my book. And I really, you know, Kate, like, it was really important for me to do right by the disabled community, because I felt like I had done wrong for so many years. And so it was important to showcase language that is outdated. You know, I am a diversity, equity, and inclusion professional, and I now work with UW Health. And we know that language is constantly evolving and changing, and that's okay. And so I was hoping to, you know, share that in the book, because, again, this is a children's book, and I'm hoping that young readers will use the language that our community is asking for.
And you write to your young readers that the words disabled and disability, they aren't bad words. Can you say a little more there?
Right, right. You know, I'm a Gen Xer, again, dating myself. And I think, you know, my generation and older generations, we shied so much from saying disabled and disability. And we came up with these euphemisms like differently abled, or, you know, disabled with a capital A, or, you know, creatively challenged. All these words to, you know, go a roundabout way of saying disabled and disability. And as I learn more about myself, you know, disability is such a salient identity for me. Just like I'm Mexican and I'm a woman. You know, so I really wanted young readers to embrace these words. You know, it's like we're reclaiming that language, like so many historically marginalized groups have done with language. They're going back and they're reclaiming these words that were used to harm or attack those individuals. And, you know, there was a really popular hashtag a few years ago, hashtag say the word, because we wanted to bring awareness to the words of disability and disabled, and to let people know that that was okay to use. And in the book, I really focus a lot on identity first language versus person first language. So I say disabled athletes, disabled individuals, disabled person
versus saying athletes with disabilities.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And that was very intentional because of that identity piece. You know, I think person first language was really important to use back in the day when disabled people were just asking to be viewed as human. Like, look at me. I need these rights. You know, during the disability rights movement, I am a person. But again, everything changes and it's evolving, and disability is an identity. So that's why I chose to use identity first language throughout the book.
Patty Cisneros-Privo, three-time Paralympian, author of Tenacious, this new children's book highlighting the stories of disabled athletes. You can join in this conversation. Call in with a question. Share your experiences. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the children's book called Tenacious, and you can share about remarkable athletes with disabilities. Call with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. We have Wisconsin author and three-time Paralympian Patty Cisneros-Privo, centers diversity and inclusion in her debut picture book highlighting 15 athletes. One of them is Dan Ferreira, who joins us now in his accomplishments in wheelchair basketball and softball. Dan's a coach and athlete, works as an adapted sport program and event facilitator for the Chicago Park District. Dan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, this is awesome.
Hey, Dan.
Well, Dan, what do you
hope? Hey, Patty.
I love the introduction. This is great. Dan, what do you hope kids learn from your accomplishments and in reading about you in this book?
You know, one, I think for our general society to be more accepting. I think when, you know, I also have a son, Owen, who has the same disability that I do, osteogenesis imperfecta. And even though I know all of the cans and the life that I've had, I was still extremely scared that second, those first couple of days that he was born. And I want parents to know that if you have a child with a disability, that they should embrace it. Disability is a part of the diversity of the world. And sure, are there a lot of challenges? Absolutely. But, you know, I think that where kids and where people learn is through failure. I think sometimes parents, they want to have a kid be in a bubble when they have a disability. And I feel like that hasn't ever changed. I'm dating myself, but I'll be 49 this summer. And when I was a kid, that was exactly the same way. And I meet parents today, you know, when I meet that kid for the first time, and I tell them all the things that they, you know, that their child can do. And they look at me cross-eyed and I tell them, look, adaptive sports can change your life, you know, because it's changed mine. So I think those are big, you know, those are big things to embrace. But I think that a book like Tenacious really illustrates the accomplishments that any child can have. And whether or not you become a Paralympian or an elite athlete or whatever, as long as you enjoy the experience, I think that's the people that have been featured. They all enjoy their sport. They all enjoy the benefits of adaptive sport.
Yes.
Patty, what did you see in Dan's story? You being friends as well, but you know, bringing Dan's story to light in the book.
Yeah. So Dan and I go way back. But, you know, Dan is one of those pioneers in the adaptive sport world. He has over 30 years of experience on, you know, the grassroots level up to the international level with wheelchair basketball. And then he transitioned to wheelchair softball. I mean, he is just a well-rounded disabled individual in our sports community. And I thought it was really important to highlight him because he has that not only like athlete perspective and lens, but he has a strong sense and lens of a coach. And he works a lot with disabled youth. And I thought his message would be really powerful for young kids and kids with disabilities who are reading the book to hear his message, because he really is, you know, one of the greats in our community. And I'm really honored to have him in Tenacious, but also be a lifelong friend. He's my brother from another mother.
Dan, you had to share with Patty a daily challenge and a daily joy. Can you read that little section of the book?
Oh, I actually, you're going to kill me, but I can't right now this very second.
Oh,
but
that's okay.
To me, that challenge.
I can read it if you want me.
Go ahead, Patty. Read it for me,
Patty,
please.
Patty, take it away.
Okay. So Dan's daily challenge. A daily challenge is educating the world on stereotypes about people with disabilities. I'm not everyone's hero. I'm just a good dad and a good husband, and I want to take care of my family, which leads really well into his daily joy. My daily joy is getting up and seeing my family every morning. That's my beginning and end every day. I want to be a good dad and husband for them.
Oh, I just love those words, Dan. And it really sounds that, you know, sounds like your family. You are really grounded in the people around you.
Yeah, you know, I am. And I'm very fortunate. And my son is actually with me right now, so he gets to hear this. But but to me, family is bigger than that, right? I mean, I coach, I have a bunch of adult athletes, 65 of them. I've got another group of junior athletes. I'm in my seventh generation of junior athletes. And to me, that's family too. So what made, you know, my illustration was it was taken from a picture of me coaching one of my youngsters when he was like 5 years old, who happens to be now in college at the University of Illinois. And it's just a really special moment that was captured. And to me, it's, you know, that power is being able to give back and really create accountability within our community that I feel like doesn't always get put out there for disabled people.
I wonder, what is your philosophy as a coach? What is your approach with coaching, and does it change for athletes with different disabilities?
You know, to me, one of the most important things I tell my athletes and families is I don't care if I win a game. I really don't. I've lost games. I've won games. What I really care about most is when I have athletes win the game of life. That is what's most important to me. That day, like, I've got some kids that are in college all across the United States right now. Some are playing wheelchair basketball, some aren't. But I want them to continue that, my message, and to continue to give back. You know, I mean, I'm extremely fortunate to have had great mentors in my life, especially when I needed them. When I didn't have a great self-identity, I didn't find adaptive sports until I was 15 years old. And I was that kid who looked in the mirror who said, God, why me? Why couldn't it have been Joey down the street? He bullies me every day, you know, like, and reminds me of how different I am. And instead of, you know, disability being celebrated, you know, it's because today, you know, the great thing about today's world is we do celebrate differences.
Let's pause.
I feel like disability, we still have a way to catch up.
Let's pause there. Dan Ferreira, profiled for his accomplishments in wheelchair basketball and softball. Patty Cisneros-Prevost's new book, it's called Tenacious. You can add your thoughts, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. They are extraordinary athletes, driven and tenacious, which is the name of the new children's book that seeks to help change the narrative around people with disabilities. You can join in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. Patty Cisneros-Prevost is a three-time Paralympian and author of Tenacious, and Dan Ferreira is with us, one of 15 athletes featured in the book. His accomplishments focus on wheelchair basketball and softball. Patty, I want to ask you about the athletes featured in the book involved in the Paralympic Games, because you see that as a common thread through these stories. Does competing in the Paralympics change an athlete's career and their life?
That's a good question, Kate. I think it's changing now. When I competed in my first Paralympic Games was 2000 in Sydney, Australia. And back then, there was hardly any education or awareness about the Paralympics. And we often got mistaken for the Special Olympics. Mm. And the Special Olympics is for those that have cognitive disabilities. And it's a great organization, but it's not the Paralympics and it's not the same. And so when I competed, you know, it was all for heart and soul and the love of the sport and our teammates. There wasn't really any sort of career change or trajectory that happened after that. But I'm seeing it more now, with more awareness, more sponsorship. I mean, you know, when you get money behind you, it really changes things. We have sponsors like Toyota and Nike and the Hilton, and they're becoming more and more for the Paralympic athletes and Paralympians, in particular, not just Olympic athletes. And so I think, you know, one example I'd like to share is Matt Scott. I knew Matt Scott. He's played for Dan, wheelchair basketball athlete. And he's just such a dynamic person and athlete and overall great guy. And he has competed on the Paralympic scene and now works, I think, for Visa as a spokesperson. And he's just all over the map. I mean, if you follow him on social media, he is doing big events, lots of public speaking, lots of commercials. And I think, you know, we're finally getting where we've wanted to be for such a long time. And it's so great to see this younger generation really being able to take advantage of that.
Dan, what do you see as the impact of the Paralympic Games, especially in the athletes that you coach?
Well, one, it provides that tangible dream. You know, I'm very fortunate. I have an athlete who's on the U.S. women's team right now. And I met her when she was 8 years old, Excel Gonzalez. And I remember when I met her mom, and the first time I saw Excel played, she had it. And I remember, like, I spent probably 3 years trying to convince her family that there was an it. And actually, one of the first people I called was Patty to talk to her mom. As Excel also happens to be Mexican, and being able to make that connection. And, you know, this, you know, when you see that athlete, I feel like you just know. But I think you don't always have to make, you know, become a Paralympian. You can live by those ideals and just the same way that Olympians do, because not every person who tries out for the Olympics makes that team. So, right. But, you know, as it's changed, you know, when I first started, when you were trying to try out, if you made a team, you were funding your own trip. That could be $5,000 to $20,000 a year that you were trying to fundraise. You know, the great thing about today, thanks to pioneers like Patty and a bunch of teammates that came back before them, you know, all that stuff is pretty much funded now. And in fact, when they win a medal, they get paid by the USOPC.
You know,
and that payment is finally equal to the Olympians, which wasn't the case in the past.
Oh, that's interesting. So there has been pay equity.
Yes.
Yeah, that's really important. And I'm wondering, Dan, you know, how you have to, for competitive athletes, you have to be assertive and aggressive in sport. You can't hold back. How do you instill in athletes who may be reluctant to put their own physicality on the line due to different circumstances? Like, do you encounter that type of holding back or that type of hesitation?
Yeah, you know, I do. And I think, you know, one of the things I try and teach our athletes is disability isn't an excuse, right? Like, the hardest thing for a parent to hear is that a parent with a child with a disability is, one day you're not going to be here because your child should outlive you. And what kind of life do you want them to have, you know, after you're gone? So when I come onto the court, I want the kids to bang around. In fact, like, one of our drills for my 6-year-olds is just them. They call it wheelchair bumper cars, and they just go around bumping into each other. And that's, you know, we try and make it fun. But then understanding that, you know, kind of kids fall, they see how, you know, they go fast. Like Martrell, you know, I always remember the first time he got into a sports chair, and he was like, this smile that comes over a kid's face the first time they get in a sports chair, and they just go fast. Because what do kids want to do? They want to run, they want to jump, they want to move, right? And the chair should be able to accommodate that. And that's what makes adaptive sports so special. And, you know, like, we've talked a lot about wheelchair basketball, but the National Wheelchair Basketball Association, the reason why it's, you know, we try and push a lot of kids in that direction because we have more teams per capita than any place else in the world. Mm-hmm. So there's this giant infrastructure of coaches who are like-minded, you know, and we're able to, like, I know if I find a kid in, I'm going to say Ohio, I can send him to Jake Counts. And I've done that. And now there's, you know, an athlete who's graduating, going to U of I next year, actually. So, you know, not every kid's going to be a Paralympian, but living those ideals is going to help them become a better parent someday, a better employee someday. You know, we have to improve the unemployment rate of people with disabilities.
That's right.
Patty, when I was looking at the pictures and, you know, talking about the adaptive equipment here and banging around in wheelchairs, it seemed through the illustrations, it's like being an extension of someone, of the athlete. It's just part of their being and part of their function. What was it like to work through the illustration process and work with the illustrations that you were seeing and putting words to, or vice versa?
Yeah, that's a really... that's a great question, and it's a really unique process. So I am published by Lee and Lowe Books, and when I got my contract, my editor at the time, Cheryl Klein, she presented me with 5 illustrators, like, and their work, and she asked, you know, what do I like about them? List them in order. And it's funny because Dion wasn't, you know, my top 3 choices. But she saw that he could really capture movement and people in illustrations. And of course, she's the seasoned veteran in this industry, not me. And so I'm really thankful that she had that vision. And what we did, I've never spoken to Dion, which is really, you know, strange in my view. But I'm a rookie in this writing industry. What we did is we really communicated via Google Docs or Google Drive. I collected a bunch of photos from the athletes, because I wanted them to select photos that really depicted who they were. And also in sport photos, you could be making the worst horrible face when you're competing. So I wanted to make sure that the athletes got to choose photos. And then I, you know, created these folders and I sent them to Dion. Dion made sketches. He would send them back to Lee and Lo, and then Lee and Lo would send them to me. I would review them. I would provide my feedback, but then we also sent the illustrations, you know, the initial sketches to the athletes, because it was really important to capture their disability correctly and their adaptive equipment correctly. You know, Dan's a perfect example. He has osteogenesis imperfecta, which is, you know, brittle bones disease, and he's broken over 200 bones in his life. And so, you know, his legs are a bit shorter than a non-disabled person. You know, his arms don't extend like a non-disabled person. And that was really important for me to capture in the book, and for Dan too. I mean, he wants to be, you know, illustrated correctly. And so it was important that we shared these sketches with the athletes so that they could then provide their feedback for Dion. And that's how it went a few times. And Dion was, you know, such a pleasure to work with. I later found out that he also has a disability. He has an eye disease, which is, you know, really interesting. Seeing that he can, you know, he's just a wonderful illustrator and super talented. So I'm really thankful that Cheryl matched this up from the beginning.
Dan, what did you think of your illustration?
Man, first off, extreme source of pride. You know, I could have used a couple more muscles. I'm just kidding. It depicts me well. You know, I think it captured that the moment. Is again really special. That idea, you know, the thing I really wanted to put out there was this idea of being able the opportunity that I have to give back to that future generation. That was important to me. So making sure that connection between that young man and my illustration and I had chemistry, and that's what I was really looking for. And to make sure that the chair was depicted well too, right? I know we talked about different, like, should it have push handles was like one of the first questions. And it was like, no, absolutely not. Nobody pushes me around. I don't want anybody to push any youngster around unless they need help. So, but yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I didn't even think about the arms or legs thing. I guess thinking about it now, I definitely see that.
Oh, that's interesting. What would you tell young people, disabled athletes who are interested in a sport, Dan, but can't access adaptive equipment or the coaching, or maybe they're in a rural area where they don't have access to a particular type of sport?
You know, I would say, and I don't know if you're aware, but, you know, Wisconsin, which is a primarily rural state, has one of the best adaptive sports organizations in the country, Wisconsin Adaptive Sports Association. And, you know, I even come back to, you know, Christina Rip Barney, who's in the book, who used to travel 3 hours to get to practice. And, you know, I think just come out when you can. That's what I tell people in my program. You might not be able to be at our junior program every Saturday, but, you know, think about it in terms of what would you do for your able-bodied child, right? Because able-bodied sports is incredibly demanding, right? You have to be there sometimes 3-4 times a week. Well, in adaptive sports, we're asking for like one day a week, probably a Saturday, and a tournament once a month, maybe twice a month once we get closer to the end of the season. I'd say be open-minded. See the world in can instead of can't. Because, again, parents, when you have a kid with a disability, you get hit with can't, or you're that person who acquires a disability. Everything is about what you can't do. We live in, you know, within a society that's based in a medical model of disability where you're not whole if you're not upright. Again, that's another important part of Tenacious was, you know, that idea of being able to be your best self and finding the right adaptive piece of equipment to be able to live a productive life.
Patty, go ahead.
If I could just add too, you know, we live in the world of Google, and it's really easy to Google adaptive sport or wheelchair basketball, wheelchair softball, or whatever it is, and find resources online. And I also provide resources at the end of Tenacious for those who are curious. And in terms of resources and funding, there are many grants and opportunity scholarships for adaptive equipment. And one of the biggest ones is Challenge Athletes Fund. They give out a ton of money each year for adaptive sports specifically, and also travel to different training camps and different, you know, opportunities like that.
Well, Patty and Dan, such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, this was great. Thank you so much, Kate. Dan, you're awesome. See, this is why I got him. I picked him to be in Tenacious. He's just incredible.
Thank you, Kate. Hey, shout out to the brothers and sisters at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, which is one of the pioneer universities to offer.
Oh, we've had them on the show. Yes, yes, indeed. Well, that's been so great. Thank you so much. Wisconsin author Patty Cisneros-Prevost, three-time Paralympian, debut picture book, Tenacious, 15 Adventures Alongside Disabled Athletes. Dan Ferreira, featured in the book for his accomplishments in wheelchair basketball and softball. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Tony Evers enacted a two-year spending plan at the state capitol this week, and he's here to talk about it. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR. Governor Evers, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. It's good to be here. How are you today?
I'm doing well. So, talking about the budget, Democratic lawmakers voted against the two-year state budget in floor votes before the bill reached your desk. Why have you signed the budget into law after making partial vetoes rather than veto the entire budget and send it back to the legislature?
That's the point. The Democrats did not like the budget as is, and neither did I. And that's why I made significant changes to the budget to make it more palatable. In turn, it was really important. We had some really important things in the budget that I did support around affordable housing, PFAS, taking care of PFAS for the first time, actually having money to do that. Obviously, the work that we did in shared revenue to get money to our counties and municipalities, and also, frankly, pay increases for correctional folks and people that work in the juvenile or in the justice system. And so we had lots of wins in that budget, and I felt what we could do with the budget as it relates to what was accomplished, but also what we could do with vetoes made it doable for me.
Let's turn to taxes. You vetoed Republican-backed tax cuts that would have benefited wealthy people, and your vetoes also effectively limit tax relief to middle-income earners based on our state's income tax brackets. Why make those vetoes?
Well, first of all, I said to the legislators, the Republican legislators, right from the get-go, that I would veto any tax reduction bill that would have essentially advantaged people, our wealthiest people in Wisconsin. That said, what I did is with a veto was to reduce that piece at the wealthier end, but also everybody did get a tax cut even with my veto. We have $175 million, if I'm not mistaken, that will impact proactively the middle class. So it was a middle class tax cut that we did.
Let's turn to schools. Schools will get an additional $325 per student in each of the next two fiscal years under the budget. You vetoed language in the budget bill to extend the annual raise to 400 years. Why did you do that?
Well, it gives schools some hope that going forward and this year too, that that ability to have some semblance of reasonableness going forward, and obviously 400 years is a long time going forward, that that they would get the money that they need. That said, the present budget has some significant money for schools. It's not that it's at the level that I think is important, but we have $50 million to take care of and work on the literacy issues. We have $25 million in a very important area of kid mental health. And again, that $325 per student. And so we wanted to make sure that we have some long-term stability in school funding. And that's why I did the veto the way I did. Even though this type of veto doesn't happen often, it has happened in the past. Actually, my predecessor did it. Going in the opposite direction of taking money away. But we want to send a message to our public schools that indeed they can count on a robust budget going forward also.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the newly signed state budget with Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers. You can join in with a question at 800-642-1234. So following the enacting of the budget, the co-chair of the legislature's budget writing committee, Mark Bourne, said in a statement that extending the annual raises for school funding will, quote, massively increase property taxes on families. Are you concerned about having that effect?
Always concerned about that. And that, I suppose if somebody deliberately wanted to mess with the system, that could happen. But there's always been money to moderate or actually negate property tax increases, and that's what we would do. So for him to say that, that's assuming that the Republicans aren't going to put any more money into public schools and protect property taxpayers. I can't believe that that's exactly what they want to do. If they do, I would veto that. We have to have a system that makes sure that our property taxpayers are covered and mitigate against large property tax increases. But we also have to give some guarantees to the schools at the same time. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. I'm sad that they think that they can't do that. It's easy.
So Representative Tyler August, Majority Leader of Republicans in the Assembly, said your vetoes break the deal you struck with Republicans on school funding, and says that you went back on your word. What are your thoughts there?
Well, that's a lie. It's pretty simple. He was never in the room, for starters. And second of all, what we did with working with the leadership of the Republican Party on both the Senate and the Assembly side was to take care of the next 2 years, period. We never talked about what was going to happen subsequent to that. So for August or any of those others that are making that claim, that's just baloney. It's unfortunate. It's childish behavior.
We have less than a minute left, but also in education, the UW system, what will happen to the $32 million the legislature had set aside for its workforce programs?
Well, the university will come with a plan to talk about how they're going to spend $32 million on workforce. They do a lot of workforce training already, so I don't think this is going to be a heavy lift for them. So that's what the deal was, is that $32 million would be held by Joint Finance Committee until they saw the plan. So I anticipate that that will happen soon, and they will come to an agreement.
And what happens to DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Effort to get rid of that work, and you think about that all across the state of Wisconsin. Whether it's WMC, whether it's big companies, whether it's small companies, they're all dealing with and advocating for DEI and the private sector. It seems odd that we would want to take that away from the University of Wisconsin system. So I veto that piece, and so the university can continue the good work they're doing in that area.
Governor Evers, thank you for joining us.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Kate. Take care.
You too, Governor Tony Evers. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.